Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and director of New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deal in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my crew guests. My guest today is Isao Yoshimura, who is a private chef based in New York. Isao grew up in the countryside of Japan and came to New York in 1996 and jumped into the restaurant industry when authentic Japanese restaurants were much fewer than now. And his approach to Japanese cuisine is traditional, but his work reflects his free creative mindset to adapt to wherever he is. For example, he fishes and grows produce by himself to achieve the best taste and flavors he wants to offer to his clients. So today we'll discuss how a young man from Japan became a private chef in New York and his unique philosophy of cooking authentic Japanese food, the joy and challenges in his life as a private chef in America, and much, much more. But before you start, Japan Eats is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We truly appreciate your feedback. Also, I have a quick announcement. So as you may know, a major earthquake struck Japan's Noto Peninsula in Ishikawa Prefecture on January 1st. The death toll keeps climbing, and the damages to the beautiful region is tremendous. And importantly, 10 out of the 11 sake breweries in the Noto Peninsula were completely or partially destroyed. So if you can, please donate through reliable organizations, including the Japanese Red Cross, the U.S.-Japan Foundation, and Ishikawa Sake Brewers Association. And I put the links to these organizations in the show notes. Now, let's start a conversation with Isao Yoshimura. Hello, Isao-san. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me for the show.
Yeah, so this is very exciting. So you're such a unique figure, and we discussed everything about who you are. So first of all, to get to know you, where are you from, and what did you eat when you grew up?
All right. I was born in the Kumamoto Prefecture, always the west side of Japan. Always very famous of the horse meat, horse sashimi. It's like Japanese very strange culture, but I grew up at there, and I eat horse meat and rice.
Well, my father was from Kumamoto, and I know the culture. It's really it's kind of very different from Tokyo. It's more relaxed, but also people known for a very stubborn mindset. And everybody says I had a lot of Kumamoto blood in my blood. So how did you get into cooking?
I was in the student at university. I was working at Japanese cuisine, so like almost living in the Japanese cuisine, like a yakitori or tempura restaurant, for the 2-3 months of my work there. And I'm crazy onto the cooking by myself.
Right. But then I heard at the age of 19, you were at university studying for, I think, economics, and you got a first job in the restaurant? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it is.
Right. Interesting. So, and then when and why did you move to the US?
Yes, and in Japan, it's common to start full-time job immediately graduating from university. But I couldn't decide this to work for some reason. Then my second cousin introduced me to opportunity to work at the New York. But it's the business title is accounting because I'm graduating the economics university. But I really love the cooking, so I'm starting to move to New York to like as the chef.
Right. Well, that's such a dramatic change from accounting to cooking. So
right.
So, but then that was in 1996, and so how did you start your career as a chef in New York?
Okay, actually, I have something. I moved down to New York on 1997. So the article is a little different, but actually 1997.
Mm. Okay, right. So I got an amazing feature of yourself in American publication, and it was, sort of my mistake. It was 1997, and then you worked at the restaurant East in Manhattan?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So what is the concept of East Restaurant? And because it was near Carnegie Hall. Unfortunately, it's gone now, but it was one of the most kind of legendary Japanese restaurants back then, right?
Yeah, I think so. That they opened at the middle of 80s in New York. So when I was working at the restaurant, still any fish and ingredient is not too fresh. That generation. So I was learning at the sushi technique and then recipe from the East restaurant, a very authentic Japanese izakaya style restaurant. So I learned how to cooking, how to make a sushi, blah, blah, blah. However, from the older chef in the restaurant, he's very legendary chef from Japan. So I learned from him like a sushi philosophy. It's not technique, any recipe. It's just I learned from him the philosophy.
So what was the philosophy?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So like he doing like an Edomai style sushi chef. So he could, he did like a lot of technique for the food, but still ingredient is not too fresh. But many customers are happy to eat his sushi because his personality makes more like flavor on the fish, like magic. So that's how I learned how to, you know, like an entertainment thing, like a sushi chef. So I was learning from him.
Right. So it's very hard to imagine back then, 1997. Well, we see so many authentic Michelin-starred sushi restaurants and Japanese food restaurants, but then it's people would think Japanese restaurant can be one of the Asian restaurants, and it's very hard to convince diners what they're eating. And it sounds like your chef, master chef, it's the Mr. Yachi. He probably had to deal with, you know, unavailability of the premium ingredients like fresh fish, seafood, which is now easily available. But then he had to deal with customers who are not familiar with Japanese food. So sounds like it's like a boot camp for you to be not just cooking Japanese cuisine, but also you have to educate people about what they are eating and also explaining ingredients and all those things. Sounds like that's what you're still doing in your business as a private chef, I think. Right. Okay. So, and then you, what do you think, you know, the location of Carnegie Hall neighborhood, did you learn something from working at the East? Is it a very specific midtown restaurant management learning lessons or something like that? Did you have any specific lessons outside of the philosophy from Mr. Yagi?
I learned a lot of sushi technique and recipe, the other chef too.
Mm.
So, yeah, but yeah, especially the Yachi teaching me, actually he had a surgery on the throat cancer. So he lost his voice. And I was working with Mexican people too, but he couldn't read any English, you know, character. So I was working at also technique, but how to work, you know, with disability and, you know, so many like tough days. But I learned how to work with him, how to work with my coworkers, how to respect people. So mostly I'm really learning from him, and also the so many customers teaching me to, you know, surviving the restaurant.
Right. Well, it sounds like those are the things you never have learned if you were working in Japan as a chef. So it's such an interesting experience. And I think the whole thing became the foundation of what you do now successfully. So we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll dive into Issel's intriguing and fascinating life as a private chef in America. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs on HRN, Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Aki Katayama, and my guest today is Isao Yoshimura, who is a private chef based in New York. He has been cooking Japanese food for a broad audience in New York since 1997. So you worked at East for 15 years until 2011. Then I decided to work in Hamptons in New York, which is not East Long Island, South Fork, New York. So why did you decide to move on to the Hamptons, and where have you worked in Hamptons after you left East?
Okay, I moved to, I started to work at the Hampton 2011. We starting own restaurant, I mean, with a partner, Banzai Burger. It's like a hamburger shop and then bar, restaurant, and sushi bar.
Okay. And then what you think that after working for East Restaurant for 15 years, you think you kind of graduated and you learned everything and you move on? It was your time to do your own business?
Right. Yes. We opened the burger restaurant in Napik Street, really in front of the ocean side. And also, I was working at the Garnier's Inn. It's a very largest hotel in Montauk. So I opened my own sushi bar for during only one season, the summer, 2013.
So you had the Banzai Burger restaurant with your partner, but then you had a sushi section in the burger restaurant, and also you had own place, sushi bar, at the hotel, local hotel in Hamptons, where a lot of wealthy households and celebrities exist. So how I would imagine the sushi was becoming even more popular in the Hamptons, and did you feel the sushi was more demanded in the Hamptons?
Yes, I really think, realize the sushi culture in the Hamptons countryside, it's getting popular now. But I was moved there, not so many people operating the sushi. So many people really told me to thankful to open the sushi bar, even in the hamburger bar restaurant. So many local people visited us
banzai burger to enjoying my sushi and the fresh estas fish from the Montauk local fish. And yeah, the people still like sushi.
Right. Probably it would have been impossible to think when you moved to New York in 1997 that American people wants to have sushi at the American burger restaurant. So I think what you've done and really represent how Japanese food culture and sushi culture became a part of American culture, which is very exciting to me anyways. So, and has the palate of your clients shifted over the years since you moved to Hamptons in 2011?
Yeah, so now it's a lot of omakase, really high-end restaurant opened in New York City lately. But people, it's not too big change in the Hamptons. So people still like, they have the food, Japanese food, when they grow up at the childhood. They still remember the tempura, yakitori, and like a California roll or something like authentic American sushi. So they remember that. So people are trying to something, the new things, new item, like a new sushi. And I bring to my sushi from New York City to Hampton. So now I think they know not too big change, but they know knowledge a lot. So which is more best sushi? So I have a little pressure of to making sushi for them because people have get more knowledge.
Right. So you have to keep trying. And,
yeah, right. I'm still trying.
Right. Well, the number of omakase bars, sushi omakase bars in Manhattan and other and the city areas of New York really dramatically, and the prices are going up too. So yeah, I understand the clients, your clients in Hamptons probably know a lot about those high-end sushi bar. So yeah, I understand that it must be very challenging for you, but you're still very popular. I'm sure you do very well for your clients. Like you just mentioned, you know, the fresh fish from Long Island. And I heard that you often fish for the dishes you prepare at private dinner parties and events for your clients. Now you can get fresh fish, much better quality than back in 1997 in New York City. The distribution of fish, seafood in general, is really much better than 20, 30 years ago. But you still fish, and you can buy fish. It's not easy to fish, but why do you fish by yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good point. So I can get a really good fish from a fishmonger from New York. They have imported fish from Japan by the same day. But many people know that a really good fishing place in the Montauk, and we can catch a lot of freshest fish. And also I can take any process from catching the fish to the table. Very trustable, very freshest fish, and yeah, people like it. That's why I'm going to fish, keep going to the fishing, and if I have the chance to serving to the plate, to the table, I bring to the, you know, the ocean to table my fish. So that's my philosophy and my concept of my catering.
Right. So where, I mean, in East Hamptons, you can just fish and then got Montauk and fish, and what kind of fish can you catch in that area?
So in the depending on the season, what we can catch. So twice in the year, springtime and autumn, we can catch the squid fishing from the dock or from the marina. And the summertime, we going to the fishing, to tuna fishing, and the mahi-mahi, hook, striped bass. There's so many different kind of the fish around the Montauk. It's really big fishing area in the United States.
Interesting. So without buying fish from major distributor or buying from Toyo's market, you can just get the regular items for your clients by fishing?
Yes. Mostly I buy the fish from the fish company, from Toyosu, and also local fish. So just that if I catch the fish that time to before the party, or sometime my client catch fish by themselves, then call me to, oh, hey, Isao, I catch the very, very big fish. Can you come to my house to cooking? Something like that. So still people want to fresh fish on the table.
Hey, oh, that's very exciting.
Yeah, it's a really fun event. So.
Hey, oh, wow. And I heard that you also, not only fish, but also grow produce at your friend's farm in Maryland. So tell us about the farm and who your friends are. And could you tell us what kinds of produce you grow at the farm?
Yeah, my friend has a huge land farm at Maryland. They grew not only produce, they have a lot of pigs, sheep, and the chicken, but also they grew a seasonal vegetable, like tomato, carrot, cucumbers, and celery, lettuce, any seasonal vegetable. Also, I'm planting like a Japanese ginger, we called myoga. It's a very rare vegetable in the United States. I think people don't know about the myoga ginger. But I'm starting to grow the myoga ginger at the farm because the myoga ginger is really interesting flavor and taste. So that's why.
Right. Yeah, so myoga, is, if you go to a sushi restaurant, there's a red, beautiful red kind of garnish, and that's
very refreshment garnish. I
believe it helps your digestion and it's good for your health and all those health benefits as well. And so you work with your friends at the farm, and also you plant Japanese vegetables, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's amazing. So who are they? How did you get to know them?
So my best friend is I met him at the Hampton. So his childhood friend married with the farmer Nick. It's a Katukti mountain farm. So that the connection from all my fishing friend, my American, all the American friend community. So that I met him like 8 years ago.
Nice. Wow, it's very organic relationship. Mm-hmm. Hey. again, you can buy myoga or other Japanese vegetables, but why do you grow your own vegetables, which takes a lot of time and labor and care?
Yeah, exactly. So we grow the seasonal vegetable. Yeah, but I'm just looking forward to the growing of the vegetable. I'm just having fun. So eating what we grow with friends, cultivate is real, happens, and it's real, this is real. So we can grow the vegetables, so we know how to grow, and we process how safe and how tasty. So everything, I know that the story, so that's really having fun to do it. So that's mostly the reason.
Right. Yeah, I think previously when we had a chat, you created soap from the pig's lard, that's the fat, and the flowers when you're working with your friends at the farm. So sounds like it's a great lifestyle. And I was kind of envious when I first time spoke to you about what you do. So, this is kind of like, I didn't ask you previously, but this lifestyle, is this something you're looking for? One of the reasons you stay in America? Because I don't think it's easy to have this lifestyle in Japan or probably in other cities in the world.
Yeah, the people told me, many of my friends told me the same thing, but it's America's really huge. You can drive to the Hampton from New York City like 2-3 hours. I drove to the Maryland, my friend's farm, like 4 hours. Yeah, I'm really enjoying to driving to all the different world, different atmosphere, you know, the different people, also different, I mean, state. So I'm really enjoying to traveling myself to Hampton, I'm living in New Jersey, Manhattan, and Maryland. It's really kind of really fun life. Mm. Enjoying. Yeah, that's why.
Right. And you fish, you farm, you are in a vertical food distribution system. You're touching every part of it. And you have worked with a wide variety of clients at the East Restaurant, which is the city people. And then you work with wealthy clients and celebrities.
Yeah, I think Hamptons. So, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, by the way, who are your clients in Hamptons? I mean, you don't have to name the names, but what kind of people?
I had two type of the client, like a private, like a people, and also like a company working for the summer private golf club, like a catering company. I work for them, and also private clients. So mostly, I have a private client.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure some of the listeners who are sushi chefs, Japanese or non-Japanese, but, you know, seeing the demand being increased for sushi chefs, it must be really nice to get to know how you work and your cool lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure those listeners probably wants to think about what they can do by themselves. So I don't think it's easy, but I think Hamptons, maybe seasonal, right? The demand is pretty seasonal for parties in Hamptons.
It depends, actually, year by year. So I spread my client in from Manhattan to Hampton. So it's like all year long. So after the summer, it's going to start in like a wedding season. Birthday people just still live there. And you know, so many events, different events around the all year long in the Hampton. So I'm still back and forth. Yeah.
Right. So you do have a place to live in Hamptons, or you live in the city, or how's your allocation of your time and residence?
Yeah, it's really hard to find this place to live in the Hampton. So all my friends, community, helping my business, supporting my life. I'm lucky to stay my friend's house to, you know, stay for the whenever I can stay there. So,
Right, that's nice. Well, that means you're a really nice person to stay with them. So, yeah, I really, you know, like your personality really reflects your free mindset, bit gentle, very accepting, and I understand why. You enjoy your business because people like working with you. That's my impression. So speaking of, but what kind of style of sushi do you serve? Is it traditional or creative? Considering, you know, you fish, you grow plants, and you can be flexible, right, in designing your style of sushi.
Yeah, that's sometimes I can do like authentic, like a traditional sushi for my client. But what is the traditional? Edomae style is it traditional, you think? This Edomae style sushi is they catch the fish around the Tokyo Bay area and serving the sushi. That's the Edomae style. So my style is localized the New York style. So like a, not Edomae, it's like a New York Mae. It's like a New York style sushi. It's not traditional, like a hybrid, I think. I am a hybrid sushi chef.
Well, that's interesting, right? Because Edomae, Edo is the name of Tokyo, and it used to be. But I think the idea of Edomae is, you know, piece of the little bowl of rice topped with local fish, which happened to be from the Tokyo Bay. But traditional mindset, I think the essence is you use the local fish and then try to make the best taste out of it or someone you cook for. So in that sense, your sushi is very traditional. But do you add some garnish or, you know, some people add some cream cheese or like tomato, or you just try to stick with what you learned from your master?
Yeah, so I learned like a sushi is like really creative sushi from the East restaurant. Well, if I can make any cream cheese or something like an interesting ingredient for sushi from my client required, I can do it. But I liked also avocado, the jalapeno, it's good for the garnish for sushi. This is not traditional, but it's American traditional.
I think even traditional Japanese people cannot deny how avocado sushi
delicious. That's one of like a funny story. It's just like, you know, just talk. I was working with my friend's restaurant, like a Michelin star restaurant. They asked me to, hey Isao, can you tell me how to making the inside out roll? That's a very funny story for me. So Michelin star restaurant sushi chef is really creative and they're running the authentic like a Japanese sushi style, but they don't know how to making the American style sushi. So I'm teaching them, Michelin star chef, how to making the American style sushi. So really, it's a really funny story for me. So, okay.
Right. Well, that's the inside out sushi was born because American people couldn't handle the sticky texture of the nori seaweed. So by making it inside out, you don't have to go through that texture, but you get the taste of umami from the nori seaweed. I thought it was really genius. I think Japanese people can learn a lot about the creative mindset of sushi or anything from outside. And that's a really fascinating thing, right? Because people have different demand, and if you get stuck in tradition, you probably miss out a lot of things. So I think that kind of exposure, your communication with Michelin star American chef might lead to something to inspire Japanese tradition, which is very exciting. Being a Japanese chef who cooks Japanese food for the American audience, what is the joy of your work? I mean, if you compare cooking in other places, other audiences, or Japanese people, you're cooking for American, the American audience. So what is the point of working in America as a private chef?
Yeah, it seems that in the past, as a Japanese chef, I was pushing the Japanese culture onto the America. But I realized it's not truth, it's wrong. So now we live in that era where you can even find the sushi in the rural local grocery store. Anybody can get the sushi in the America. So sushi is born to like from Japan, but now sushi is changed to like very like not only Japanese. You know, we can sharing the sushi culture all over the world. So now people know about sushi by the YouTube or social network service, so people really know about sushi. So now I'm enjoying talking about the sushi culture, sushi ingredient, or Japanese food with my client. It's really enjoying. It's fun.
Right.
And also I'm teaching the how to making the sushi for my client kids.
Oh.
So that's really, it's really fun, my event. One of my
So you hold classes for children?
If my client asking me to, you know, they have the kids, so they're really enjoying my party too. Then, do you want to making the own sushi roll? I'm asking to the kids. They're really happy to do it.
Right. I think that's amazing. And it's very inspiring. And maybe you're producing future chef. Sushi chef in America.
I wish.
Hey, so what is the biggest challenge of being a Japanese private chef in America, on the other hand?
That I think and I believe that going to the trust of client is the most important thing, because I have no background right now.
So I'm using the kitchen, so my client kitchen in the Hamptons and New York City. But how people trust me, it's very, very difficult to get the trust from my client. So I did some, every my single work, I'm really concentrated to the, my customer, to what can I do? So I'm just step by step, little by little. So I get the trustable from my client. And also I'm establishing my LLC, very small company, and I put the business insurance for my job. So people trust me to, you know, as the private chef.
So how do you get the job? People refer you, you are referred by the previous clients and somebody recommends, here's Isao, he's a great sushi chef or a great Japanese food chef. So that's how you get your clients?
Yes, it is. Mostly people talking and just because I have no advertisement for like over 10 years, my business. Just people only for the people's recommendation.
Right. Oh, that's convincing. You've been very successful and gaining trust. So
I'm still surviving this. You know?
Right. But your lifestyle, you know, the life is, you know, how do you choose your lifestyle, right? Everybody has a decision. You could have kept working for a restaurant, which you decided not to. So, I think it's what you're doing is very cool. I'm sure it's very challenging, but it is very inspiring for whoever makes Japanese food in this country, and especially on your own. And you're kind of cultivating the client in the local area, and also the future client called children who enjoy your sushi as well. So that's exciting. So what are your plans and dreams?
I have the two plan. My dream is about as a chef and also about like a fisherman. So one is as a fisherman. I'm gonna traveling to the all over the world and fishing and creating sushi everywhere. So that's one of my dream. And another dream is by the chef. I always have the dream of the opening my own place. However, my concept is more like a Blue Hill Farm, as you know. It's like a farm to table concept. So this is my another dream plan. So this is the currency is a progress.
Right. Well, I think it's viable and it's possible. So the listeners who are familiar with Blue Hill Farm. So it's the Blue Hill Farm at Stone Barns Agricultural Center for education, educating people about the importance of agriculture, originally founded by Rockefeller Center. And so the restaurant resides in the Rockefeller Center's agricultural educational facilities. And of course, the Dunbarber is the chef, visionary human being, and he grows everything sustainably and inspires, works with seed breeders and all those things ahead of time. But so you're doing, you're of course doing the whole from farm to table, you fish from sea to table as well. So it's exciting. And I think maybe you can open your own restaurant somewhere in the world, not just in America. So do you have any location you want to go to open a restaurant by fishing? And
Yeah, I really want to do at the Hampton, also the Maryland at my friend's farm. But I don't need any restaurant in the farm. At the farm, because we can do the farm camp and farm workshop from own ingredients. That's only I want to do the restaurant at the Hampton. Yeah, we have a space in the farm. So
Nice. Okay, yeah. Well, keep me posted, and if you open it, you can come back and discuss it. That'd be really a lot of fun. Right. Okay, so where can we find your updates online and on social media?
I have an only account on the Instagram.
Okay. So what's the handle?
At Isao _ sushi _.
All right. So it's Isao _sushi _.
And also, I will let you know that my friend's farm Instagram account.
Okay.
It's a Catskin Mountain Farm.
Okay. Catskin Mountain Farm.
Farm.
On Instagram.
Yeah.
Right. So, right. That's your Maryland farm, yeah. Right?
And also, right. Many people contact me about the event to my email address. Just chefisao@gmail.com.
Okay, great. All right. So, well, definitely keep me posted, and I hope your plans and dreams come true, and we can talk about it and dream together. Right. All right. So, thank you so much for joining us today, Sao.
All right. Thank you for
listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikotema.com. Japanneeds is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer today is Liam Warner, and thanks for listening. I will see you next week. This episode of Japanneeds was made possible with the support of Dasai. Dasai supports HRN's creative, educational reporting and storytelling that drives conversations to empower, educate, and entertain through food-focused podcasts and world-class education programs. Japanneeds is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.